Welcome, everyone. It is 1 o'clock on the West Coast. It is Hug Nation time. All over the world, if you're watching an archive, well, it is Hug Nation time whenever this vibration of my voice reaches you. Connect with the vibration of you. Reconnects, I should say. Amplifies one another. And allows us to share this moment of intention, regardless of time and space. Doesn't matter where your feet are at. Matters where your heart is at. So let's just take a moment before we get deep and just get present. Come into the now. Become aware of your body. Remind yourself that there is only now. The only way to experience life is in the now. And in the now, nothing is missing. Only stories that we bring to the now where we think things should be different. So when things get tight, when things get tough, when things get anxious and painful, pull back to the now. Remember what's real. And remember the magnitude of the blessings in your life. Thank you, universe, for all of our blessings. Help us to focus on all the amazing things. Bring more to us. Fill us with joy and love so that we may spread love and joy in the world. Amen. Welcome! Oh, this? Well, you know, I'm just trying out some new looks since I have a new role. I was, you know, at the tanning salon yesterday, collecting my free tan because it was within a week of my birthday. And, you know, flipping through Rage magazine, for some reason, the tanning salon in Hillcrest is filled with all sorts of gay-themed magazines. So I was flipping through Rage, mostly because they often have a column by Jacob Glass, who's just amazing. And so I was flipping through it, trying to find what page the Jacob Glass article might be on, and wabawa! Dun, dun, dun! I'm not sure if you can see that, but that's me. I had no idea this was going to be in a magazine. This is a picture of me at Burning Man 2007 atop the Hugmobile. This is actually about an hour after I had placed my grandfather's ashes in the temple. It started sprinkling, got back to camp, and there was a double rainbow that was kind of ending, falling onto my RV, the Hugmobile, where Grandpa's ashes were. And this double rainbow, I was like visualizing it as the kind of these embracing arms of Grandpa Caleb. And it was one of the most amazing experiences, moments of my life. It was so, just, it was one of the things where I have to kind of just like snap and go, okay, things like this are possible. Moments like this are possible. So, this... And if you can't read the headline, it said, "The gay mothership is calling everyone home." Now, the article has nothing to do with Burning Man and nothing to do with me. It has to do with some commentary about Pride Week and being flamboyant. I'm going to take these off now because they're here to illustrate a point, which is that physical things devoid of meaning can be powerful when we allow the meaning of things to dictate how we see the world. So one might have seen me in my flamboyant pink attire, my lovely pink flowers, my pink hat, and say, well, if anyone is gay enough to be commander of the pink mothership, it is clearly this gentleman. Yeah, that's kind of why I embraced pink in the first place. Because it is such a dangerous thing to let your culture set up these rules and boundaries, which then we just live within and never question them. The same way it's so important to live in the now, because when you live in the now, you don't take things for granted, you actually experience them, is the danger with having these beliefs and rules that kind of get handed to you, and you just take them at face value. Because then you no longer experience those things. You no longer meet those people. You have a judgment you have already. And so, by embracing pink, because I am not a gay man. It's so funny because I've been, you know, posting this picture and kind of playing it up. I was like, whoa, somebody's getting laid at this year's Pride Parade. Which then someone commented back and said, isn't that kind of like saying someone's going to get wet when they fall in the water? But I'm not a gay man. And I should probably, before I go too far, just address that question. As a pink-haired man, I get asked quite a bit if I'm gay, and probably even more often, people assume that. I don't like to answer the question, are you gay? Because when I was a kid, if somebody asked me if I was gay, I would bristle up, freak out, and go, no, 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 what, no? And that answer has implied in it that being gay is wrong, not what I want, bad, judgeable. And really, why would I care? Unless there's any possibility that the person asking the question and I are going to be having some sort of romantic rendezvous, then how is my sexual preference, how is my sexual proclivities and where I like to stick my appendages, how is that relevant in any way? It's not. So I try to just not to avoid, you know, to answer the question. I generally say when someone asks, you know, are you gay or straight? I go, oh, yeah, I don't like labels. I'm sexy to the core. And I'll sleep with whoever I'm attracted to. Are you hitting on me? Because I could tell you right now if I'm attracted to you. That could answer the question for you, maybe. That sometimes goes well and sometimes is received in a little bit of a tense way. But anyway, the point is that the concept of having beliefs or rules or things that become our, in some ways they help us make sense of the world, but if we're not careful, they create prisons and they limit our experience and they limit what we're able to see, experience, feel in the world. The truth is, I have had sexual experiences with men. I've had sexual experiences with couples. But it is really women that make me tingle in the way that, you know, I find men beautiful, but I find women magical. And lest you think that, oh, let's judge the pink-haired guy, I am just celebrated 2 years with an amazing, incredibly sexy woman, and have another incredible girlfriend, and my life is rich for someone who embraces all parts of sexuality. Anyway, I'm getting off track. What I wanted to mention was these boundaries and these rules. I was watching the documentary I Am, which is a great movie. It addresses some really cool things, some of the things we talk about here, and has some evidence, and it goes in some great directions. But there's a line that Bishop Tutu says, and he's talking about how human beings are, it sounds much cooler in his voice, but I can't do it. Human beings are, more than any other animal, absolutely dependent on being taught how to be a human being. As a born child does not know how to eat, does not know how to walk, does not know how to speak, does not know how to dress, does not know how to do anything. So everything about what it is to be human is taught to a human. The paradox of mankind is that we have to bind ourselves in order to be free. Without any sort of constructs, we would just blah, 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 blah. But our mouth can make an infinite number of sounds, but we limit them to words so that we can communicate. However, the danger comes is when the power of that lessons defines the world. When you are taught that pink is a girl color, suddenly the world has walls in it. When you are taught that America is the best country in the world, you have more walls. When you are taught that being, you know, wealthy is more important than being compassionate. Boo, 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 boo. I mean, who knows what the lessons are as we grow? But some of them are subtle. Some of them are super obvious. You see it in churches all the time. You know, like, that religion is wrong. Those people are going to hell. Boo, boo, boo. All of these walls until we... And some of them, those ones seem, oh yeah, okay, I know that. But some of them are like our history, science. You know, I remember growing up, things that we were told, like pizza was healthy food. And now it's like, oh, you're trying to watch your figure? Don't stay away from pizza. And that's just a teeny one. Science is changing all the time. And people always point back to, look, there was a time when everybody believed the earth was flat. Now we know it's not. There was a time when we believed that. And so the science is every bit as dangerous a wall maker. Or at least, I won't say dangerous. It's dangerous when you don't make a practice of questioning these beliefs that are taught to you. There was this amazing podcast that I just watched with Graham Hancock on the Joe Rogan podcast. And it's linked on the Facebook Hug Nation page. And Graham Hancock's an amazing writer and researcher who looks into some pretty out there stuff. But one of the things that he was fascinated with is this kind of prehistory and civilizations that may have been on the planet before what we consider to be recorded history. And it's, you know, you can say, well, wouldn't we see evidence of that? And well, probably not. You know, what if it's 20,000 years ago? A lot can happen. And in fact, since that time, we've had massive ice ages. Throughout North America and Europe, there was 2 miles of ice that, as it shift, would like grind to dust anything that was underneath it. So very easily, a civilization could be totally obliterated without any trace. There are now finding traces of what could be cities in underground, very far underground, because things, as the that ice melted, there's been huge shifts in landmass. Anyway, I don't bring those things up as like, that was wrong, this is right. I bring it up as like, whoa. What you consider to be truth, what you consider to be the way the world is actually just more of those beliefs that could be just as biased as, you know, blacks aren't to be trusted, or pink-haired guys are gay. The history, the facts that we base our reality on are beliefs. Which means that the very nature of our reality is something that we sometimes need to question. The very nature of who we are needs to be questioned. There was a great whole section of the movie I Am where it challenges the idea that, you know, we are an aggressive, warlike people, and that's why we have so much war, and that's why we have so much conflict, is because that's just who we are. It's survival of the fittest, right? And they said, actually, Darwin's essay was about many things. The fittest was mentioned twice. Love was mentioned like 60 times. The idea that compassion and cooperation was an integral part of what evolution is about is totally not part of our cultural story. And so it's not part of our reality. We see ourselves and the world as this place of violence, which kind of condones our violence, it excuses our violence, and our separateness. It's a powerful shift when you start to go, wait a minute, who I am is a lot more of a product of what I have been taught than I thought. Who we are is a lot more a product of what we've been taught than we thought. And so there's all these great examples in the I Am movie, like of animals that work together, including human beings. It talked about how we have these biological mechanisms. In our DNA is the desire to help. When you see a Hallmark commercial on TV or you see a YouTube video of something adorable, you know, they've had an example of like a armed services person coming home and their kid, you know, embracing and crying, and you get this feeling. Everybody does. You know why? Because it's biologically a part of us. It is part of the evolutionary result of survival of the fittest is that compassion, that euphoric kind of desire to for that behavior, for that love, for that compassion, for that cooperation. And so this, we have this built-in dilemma between compassion and competition is this kind of fundamental battle within our identity as a species. And clearly, right now, the way things are going, it feels like competition is the dominant one. We have systems, we have a culture, we have an economic system and a political system that really values economic growth, economic victory versus, I mean, what is more important to us? Making sure that the rich get what they deserve from all of their hard work and efforts, or making sure that everyone is fed? There are a lot of cultures in the world, especially before the Western influence, where making sure everyone is fed was always priority, obviously. And in fact, in our DNA and nature is that desire. But we can get trained with beliefs and with stories and with sometimes not very subtle hypnotism from our culture that it's okay to be separate. You need to take care of yourself. And so as I've been consuming these different movies and perspectives, it's like, wow, it could be as simple as a remembering, a reawakening of this natural state of who we are. And then Graham Hancock had a point that I was like, whoa. He, once he got into his 50s, he was writing a book about early cultures and was looked at a lot of research and other studies and said it's beyond a doubt that these cultural shifts when humans evolved, went from like a single stone tool for a million years and suddenly like blossomed, and all these cave paintings and art and spirituality, which he said that you can tell when spirituality kicked in because they started burying people with food and water and stuff, meaning they have some sense that there is an afterlife thing of some sort. Anyway, he was saying that this massive shift was clearly in his mind influenced by hallucinogens, by human beings ingesting hallucinogens, having awakening shifts of consciousness, and then going down a path. And what was interesting was he was saying that right now, we as a culture we are in the middle of a massive brainwashing, blocking through those beliefs, those walls of belief against the war against drugs. And then yes, there are drugs that are very harmful, you know, like crystal meth, like tobacco, like alcohol, like any drug, abused. But we also, in that same category, we have drugs like he was mentioning ayahuasca, which is a powerful hallucinogen that has been used in native communities for thousands of years. It is now gaining popularity throughout the world. But we have this war on drugs that blocks us from this medicine. So he said it's fascinating because this medicine comes from the Amazon, which is a incredibly fertile, rich part of this living ecosystem, this entity of the earth. And as we are destroying this Amazon, it is actually reaching out and going, hey, okay, let me send out this messenger. Let me send out this teacher to you. And we're saying, no, just say no, just say no. And the earth is going, you're sick and I need to help you. We can do this, but you need to shift the way you see yourself. No, 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 no. And not that I was kind of like, wow, what a crazy, crazy dilemma to be in. That our culture is kind of forcing us to stay in our old mindset of separateness, and these plant tools that are part of the overall system, which if you speak with anyone who has experimented at any length with them, will probably confirm that they are a teacher of connectedness. They are a teacher of compassion. And we have these systems now that are the same ones that are closing off our ecological responsibility are the same ones that are closing off our ability to receive this medicine, receive this message. Whew, I get it. That's going off into some wacky places. And it's a scary place too, because why challenging the idea of the war on drugs, it's so easy to be labeled, oh, you can't handle life, you want to just, you go to do drugs, whatever. Our consciousness, our mind, is the ultimate platform, playground for our experience of the universe. And we are in a state, a culture, that has criminalized exploration of our own consciousness. Graham's argument was that if you don't have the right to explore your own consciousness, then you absolutely have no liberty. Nothing else really matters. If you cannot, you don't change, you are, it's a tyranny of the way you think. And that by giving away control of our own consciousness to the state, it's a very dangerous place to be. We already have laws, he was explaining, that govern behavior. So if you do a drug and then do something wrong, we have laws for that. That's how the system works. That's how freedom works. If I drink and crash my car, there are laws to address that. I don't need to have a law that says how and when I can drink. And the same is true with any sort of freedom-based consciousness exploration. I agree with this so deeply that it's hard for me to express. I have traveled to other countries and experimented with medicines of different sorts. I would be remiss in saying that they have not been significant tools of my growth, of my spiritual opening, of my path, my current state of happiness. I would also be remiss if I didn't say that these are tools and they need to be done with guides and with intention and with respect. This doesn't mean you can go to a party, get fucked up on some drug, and go, cool, now I'm a better person. No, it means you need to say, find people that have done the work, help to guide you through set and setting and intention to say, how can I strip away some of the veil and see what this deeper dimension, inner dimension, outer dimension, whatever, has to teach me about myself and the universe. Whew. Now, keep in mind, that's all being said by a man with pink hair. And how much can you trust a man with pink hair? The chemicals alone have got to have affected his brain. They should outlaw those dyes, for gosh sake. Now, just wanted to just finally kind of reiterate that it is not any one belief that is right and any other one that is wrong. It is making sure that you recognize that the reality that you base your world in is based on things that have been told to you. Unless you are involved in an incredibly dedicated practice of meditation and contemplation and reading of awakened masters. And even then, you still need to be aware of how much of your universe, your world, your experience of reality is filtered through your beliefs and the beliefs that have been given to you. Last week we talked about trying to get your straw clean, trying to realize how much debris, how many issues, and it's not just the issues of guilt and shame, it's also the beliefs about the way reality should be. How much of our sickness, how much of our pain, how many people suffer because of the cultural belief that there's one perfect person out there for you, and you're going to find that person, and they're going to save you and ride off on a white horse. How many people suffer because of that? That may happen to people, yay! But how many other ways are there to be happy and joyful that people are not open to because of the limiting beliefs of this cultural fairy tale? So, we need to challenge, check, be present, question, And in that place of question, of breaking and shattering and destroying, crushing, ripping off, shedding, we get to this raw state where we're back to beginner's mind. We're back to a baby's wonder, a childlike appreciation and awe. And then we're back in the role that we were meant to play as a child of the divine, as a nerve cell of the universe, as a tool to appreciate, receive, and amplify that love from that cooperation, to thrive in that place of cooperation and love and connection. So let's have a hug and do what we can to amplify that vibration. Recognizing that even the words I speak are ones that should be questioned. Even this idea of connection should be questioned. Your truth comes from the inside. All this outer stuff and these ideas and all of that is simply tools to go through to help you filter and figure out whatever you're left with. That resonance, that heart song, that is what guides you. Do not listen to the man in pink hair. Listen to the voice inside you. So as we squeeze our bodies, we recognize that all the people that we encounter are all struggling with this. And they, from the bottom of their heart and the depth of their thoughts, will defend and protect and try to help you from these limited beliefs. And that doesn't mean their heart isn't pure. It means that their spirit isn't clear. None of ours is. But we forgive others and we forgive ourselves for getting caught up in our ego stuff and our stories. And try to simply love ourselves on the journey. Love others on the journey. Love them on the journey even if they never take another step and they spend the rest of their lives fighting you. We still love them. We still see that divine perfectness in them. And for the next few breaths, let's just feel connected, regardless of what our stories are, regardless of our identities, regardless of our beliefs. Let's let them all go and just be in this vibration, in this cosmic flow. Let the river of the divine just take us for a few breaths. Let's take three. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Breathe in love. Share it with the world. Last one, breathe in love. Share it with the world. We are connected. We are perfect. We are newborns with beginner's minds, opening to wonder in every moment. Thank you for being you. And on behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. Thank you. I love you. Namaste.